Hello and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. My name is Michael Crowd of Idea Dudes, and in this show we're going to discuss the web farm preparation. Who am I? Well, I've been in the industry for over 23 years. I've trained several branches of the government and the military, including the United States Air Force, Marines, Navy, and Army. If you want to know more about me, check out my GoGo profile. If you have any questions or comments, put them in the question comment box at the bottom of this radio broadcast. Let's get started. So web farms are becoming more and prevalent in the IT world with the introduction of SharePoint and the .NET family of applications. There is a process that needs to be followed in configuring a web farm. And what we're going to discuss is the preparation steps. Now, the first thing we need to do is we need to make sure we back up our configuration, back up our servers, so we can store this information, especially when we're doing a high risk maneuver. When backing up a web server, there are different types of data that you have to understand. One of them is the website application, and the website application is just a collection of files. It may be ASP.x, maybe ASP, could be PHP. I mean, there's different types of data that we can house on an IIS web server. There's also the website data. We have the website XML configuration files. You should also do a full backup of the web server in case you're going to be doing this for a disaster recovery plan. And you should have a disaster recovery plan for your different IIS web servers. Now, some of the different data that we do back up is the website files. Now, these website files can be located on physical drives. They can be on UNC paths. They can be a share. They could be on DFS, which is a distributed file system. That's really what we should have. And we'll in our actual course that goes along with these radio broadcasts, we do talk about how using a shared configuration, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But the DFS is going to allow for redundancy of our shares, and you want to be able to provide a redundant environment, a very pass-through type environment, and making a very passive type of management. Now, the web server configuration, which is going to be underneath the system root, system 32, the inet serve, and config, and that's going to be the application host.config file, and this has all of the settings for our IIS server. And the .NET framework settings is going to be system root, Microsoft.NET framework, and it's going to be the machine.config. That's going to be our configuration for our .NET framework. And then Windows Server 2008, of course, is going to be a system root. And we have our web log, website log files. Now, these log files we should put onto a different machine, different hard drive. But by default, they're underneath the C:\, / inet pubs and logs. Now, one of the best practices is to relocate those logs and put them onto a different hard drive. You can put them onto a mount point, which will allow you to be able to have space connected to a folder, and this folder is actually not physically on the C drive, but looks like it is. And now, if you do have a disaster recovery or a disaster, we need to talk about what happens when we have to bring the web server back up. Well, there's some different steps that we have to go through, and one of them might be we might have to rebuild the whole web server, the back of the OS and so forth. We'll definitely have to restore the website application, restore the data, the XML config files. If all the website data resolves locally on a full web server, recovery may be required. And remember that IIS7 has a localized configuration storage system. That's the application config, host.config, the machine.config, and the web.config. Those are our configuration files, unlike what we had in IIS6, which is metabase.xml. What this does, though, is it makes it easier for doing recovery by restoring or relocating these files, and also they're not connected to the machine itself. So the application data and XML config files are going to have to be restored also. Now, one of the things that we should do is make sure we can verify. We need to examine the backup logs, because if you go and back up and you have errors, then you're going to have to do it again. You need to check for error messages and also perform a regular test recovery. And this is very important, because if you don't, then what will happen is you may have a nice backup, but if you can't restore from it, then what's it all about? Example is I used to work for the company doing consulting, and it was a resort type of deal. And the director of IT, what I did is I set up a backup of SQL Server. So I was long gone for a couple months, and I got a call from the director of data processing. He called me up and he said, you know, that backup that you made of SQL Server didn't work. I said, have you been doing any test recoveries? And he said, no. Well, you need to do that, because if you do have a backup and you do have a failure and you can't restore, then that backup doesn't make a difference. So make sure you do perform your test recoveries and check the integrity of the data. And you can do that by in your backup utilities, your third-party backup utilities, like Backup Exec or the DPM solution from Microsoft. We can always check the integrity, because we need to check to make sure that those files that we are backing up are not corrupted. Because if we have to restore them, then we're trying to get back information. And also check for data preservation, meaning that we have it off-site or someplace different than the local company. Just think of Katrina and what happened with all those companies that didn't, they had their data, their backup in their actual offices and didn't have it off-site. Now they're out of business because they don't have the information that they paid so much money for to create in the first place. If it costs $1 million, it's probably going to cost you $5 million to recreate it. So back it up. So one of the things that IS7 brings to the table is something called central shared configuration, centralized. And it is a new feature in Windows IS 7.0. And it helps support homogeneous web farms. So that means that they're all the same. All of the machines share the same configuration from one server group. Now, share configuration process, what you do is you create a UNC share on a file server, export the web server configuration to that share, and then enable the share configuration on all the front-end web servers in the farm. All using the same files on the share, IS 7.0 eliminates the need for replication or synchronization. That's why it's very important that we implement it on DFS, because there's some advantages of using DFS, and it can be used to allow for files to be distributed across multiple servers. See, what happens with a distributed file system or DFS, what we do is we implement what are known as targets. And each of the targets has a copy of that data that's going to be replicated through DFS replication. Also, DFS allows you to centralize the network resources in a unified namespace, so you don't have to make any changes to the configuration on each of the different servers. A logical namespace space remains a constant even if you move network resources. And so it makes website management easier. You can use relative links in your website because you're pointing to the DFS share. These links can point to any resource, even if a resource points to another server. You can change the location of the resource without having to update the links in the website. And you can use a DFS administrator tool to update the namespace to point to the new location. The namespace is also updated. You do not have to modify anything on the website because it's all the same. Now, you can also use something called offline configuration files. They're not recommended that you do this. It's not a best practice, but if you do, it is faster than DFS. It's easier to configure than DFS. There's no complete infrastructure needed. Quick and easy to use and ensures simple availability. But there are some cons to this. But the pros of DFS is that a config is always up to date. Effective WAN network usage, because what it does is it's going to use DFS replication and it's going to only transfer what has changed. It also provides high availability because you're connected to the same share. Everybody's connected to the same share. That one server goes down, which in a web farm, what we're doing is combining everybody with a cluster IP address. The client comes in and the cluster IP address, the traffic is distributed among the web farms or web farm members. And so if one of those servers goes down, we don't have to reconfigure anything because we're using the shared configuration and DFS. Ease of data access with the namespace virtualization, ease of publishing content to branch locations from the central office. Because all we have to do is just update the central office server, and then it's going to distribute it based on being in DFS. It's going to distribute it through the distributed DFS replication. And you can locally access local access for users without going across the WAN. Because now the information, when I go and make a change to the central server, it's going to replicate to the other ones. It's going to be local. It's going to be up to date. It's easier management of data and server location. So the config is always up to date. Configuration available to the front end servers, always up to date and available. Effective WAN network usage. Only changes made to the file need to be transmitted over the WAN. It's using what is called remote differential compression algorithm. And what that does is it decides, based on the changes, what needs to be sent over. And it's just going to be drips of data that has changed, which serves as a basis for DFS replication. And it can eliminate backup processes at the branch office. It's efficient, wide area network friendly, and DFS replication keeps all of the servers up to date. High availability because the namespace offers a simple way of redirecting the users to other servers. When a server is not available, a referral will be made to an available server. DFS replication keeps all of the servers up to date. Ease of data access with name virtualization because it provides a uniform name across all the shared servers. It makes it easier for users to remember their server names, easily access their data. Ease of publishing content, like I said, to a branch location from a central office because it makes it easy to distribute the core content. You only update the central office to all the remote offices. And local access because the content is published locally. If a server becomes unavailable, then what happens is a referral is made to the closest server and the namespace controls the referrals. And it's easier management. IT administrators benefit from a new, easier to use MMC snap-in called the DFS management. It greatly simplifies the management of DFS replication and DFS namespaces. So the benefits of using shared configuration overall, because that's what we're looking at for a web's farm, is that it's portability, quickly move sites, applications, or servers, replication. It puts the same configuration on multiple machines. Synchronization keeps the website configurations in sync. And stage deployment. We can easily stage and roll back server changes without a hitch at all. So I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. If you have any questions or comments, please use the comment box below. If you're interested in viewing my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for Michael Kraut. If there are a show that you would like me to do, you can let me know by using the question and comment box. Thanks for your time today. And remember to tune in to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. As always, have a great day and bye-bye for now.